You're tuned to The Weekend, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for The Weekend, and joining us today is a good friend of mine, former colleague, journalist, worked for the newspaper for many years, award-winning reporter. She was well-known also for the stories that she did on the missing women in Juarez. And, she retired, but journalists don't retire, right?
No, not when you have a calling, Louis.
And so Diana has launched the DigiZone Network, and she is the president, and she is going to talk a little bit about some of her past history, but also about how social media has affected the way we cover news and the way we interpret news as well. Diana, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Well, thank you for having me, Louis.
And first of all, let's start, because I mentioned before that, and people who have been around for a while remember that you were an awesome reporter for the newspaper and you covered the missing women in Juarez. At what point, Diana, did you get the writing bug? Were you always interested in news when you were a child?
Yes, Louis, since probably since the sixth grade. We had a writing contest or a writing exercise we had to do for that class. I distinctly remember it because I sat down and made up a story and turned it in. It was, you know, a work of fiction. And the teacher was so impressed that she read the story to the entire class. And she said she'd never seen anything like that from a sixth grader before. And she gave me an A++. Then I was going through my yearbook the other day looking for a picture of a friend, for a friend, to send to her. To a relative, and it's my senior yearbook from Bel Air High School. And I saw that I had even forgotten about this, that I had been selected as a who's who in creative writing, you know, by the school. And also, of course, I was also on the staff of the then, it was called the Piper's Notes newspaper, the student newspaper for the high school.
So Bel Air High School?
Yes.
Okay. As soon as you said Piper, I knew it was either John Piper in Chicago or Bel Air Highlanders. Tell us, if you wouldn't mind, what was that story about? What was the basis? What was the assignment that you all had? And, you know, as a sixth grader, as your teacher mentioned, we don't expect too much from sixth graders sometimes. Of course, now the imaginations just go wild. But was that difficult for you to do? What was the assignment?
No, I think it was just being given an assignment. So I sat down and decided we just had to make up a short story. The sky was the limit. And so I sat down there, and I do remember that I wrote about – it was some kind of mystery, a short mystery. And it involved prayer, and it involved someone using a rosary to offer prayer because of some fear. And hearing a noise, it was strange and fearful, and that the noise actually turned out to be a cat disturbing something on a counter. So I remember those elements of the story. I don't remember the whole thing, but yeah.
And then after that, obviously, you attended University of Texas at El Paso, and you were you a student of Ray Chavez yet?
No, I wasn't. I was before his time, actually. I was a student of Joe Lewell's, who was in his younger days as an academic here, a radical who advocated for Chicanos to be hired at a time when most of the faculty, and especially the higher echelons of the university were all white, predominantly white men.
And when you enrolled here at UTEP, and of course, there are so many things happened in journalism that have made journalism, you know, so awesome again and caused a lot of people to be involved in journalism, like the JFK assassination, the Vietnam War,
Watergate,
and of course Watergate was the one where everybody wanted to be like those two guys, Woodward and Bernstein. Tell us a little bit about once you finished here and you got your start in the newspaper. Was it what you expected, or was it a lot different?
No, it was what I expected, and what I expected was to be able to do some things. And so I didn't stop and analyze what the industry was like or what the career was like. I just jumped into things. I was assigned, for example, my first beat was City Hall in Las Cruces, and right away I got into it. The mayor got mad at me, wanted me fired. I was also sent to cover the legislature in Santa Fe, the New Mexico legislature, and I did some things there that stored things up. And just at the beginning of my second year as a daily reporter, I did an investigative story involving corruption at the county government level. I was subpoenaed by a grand jury as a result of that story. And we had a trial against a county official as a result of that story. So that was like the beginning of my second year. I was still a rookie. You know?
And as far as investigative reporting, you carried that on. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the interview, you covered for so many years the missing women in Juarez. And that was a story that just carried on and carried on. And a lot of people, readers included, were concerned about your safety going into Juarez and covering these stories on your own.
Well, yes, I was concerned about my safety too. But I didn't dwell on that because I realized that I would have a window of time in which to do the investigation, and that window would not always be open for me. So I was in Juarez often at night, on the weekends. I used my vacation time to continue that investigation because by all means, the newspaper, the El Paso Times, did not have the luxury to send a reporter and have him or her spend endless time investigating this. I wanted to find out what was going on, Louis, and that has always been the motivation for my work. I want to find out what's going on. I believe you can find out things. I believe I know a process by which you can find out things, whether you're, you know, investigating local government or state government or crimes against humanity, which is what, you know, the femicides represented. So, yes, you know, like I said, I don't dwell on those things a lot because if I did, then I would not have continued.
And you wrote several books, but one of them I remember took you around the world and you were lecturing and talking to other people about your book. And a lot of people just couldn't believe that this was actually happening in the Western world.
Yes, this whole issue seemed to have taken on a life of its own. And so what amazed me is that people in other countries, in other cities, in other states beyond our area here were interested in what was happening. Sometimes I felt more so than our own local community leaders. And so this was a very different experience for me, but one which I am grateful for because it simply provided me with another venue with which to distribute the information. It's what I see as my role as a journalist, you know, find out information and get it out there.
Tell us a little bit about, because as I mentioned, you've retired from the newspaper, but you've launched the DigiZone Network, and you and I have talked about this before, social media, and how it seems like people get their news now from social media, and a lot of it is Facebook. And some of the stuff that we see on Facebook or on YouTube may not necessarily be verified, but people will read it and they'll pass it on. And then there's also Twitter that our president is very fond of using. So let's start, first of all, with social media. And when you retired from the newspaper, you had a Twitter account. You were already using social media. But what prompted you to launch something like this?
Well, I wanted to continue in journalism, and I felt it was important for people to have sources of news and information which they could use, of course, on a voluntary basis. You know, you read what these days you read what you want to, not necessarily what's in front of you. And so I was very excited about these new tools. Yeah, when I was at the El Paso Times, there was a lot of resistance on the part of some of the older school journalists to jump into these things like Twitter and Facebook and others. And at first I thought, well, you know, I myself also wondered, well, I was a little skeptical about these things. But then I started using these tools. And then I said to myself, gosh, if I'd had these tools as a journalist 20 years ago, imagine the things that we could have done. Because there are some things that are facilitated by social media. Of course, there's also the opportunity for a lot of abuse, which is what you've mentioned. Twitter, like the president, continues to be my favorite platform, social media platform. I'm on there all the time. And Facebook, I don't personally like Facebook, but I know, I read the polls and I know the trends, the tendencies is for a growing number of people to read news from Facebook. It seems like they want to do everything there, get, you know, their family activities, their personal events and the news as well, all in one place. So I myself have adjusted to that as well in launching the digital pages that I launched soon after I left the newspaper. And it was simply a desire to continue with what I've always done.
It seems, well, it was a year ago this month that our new president was elected, and it seems like in just that short year, things have changed so much, and there's a lot of hatred out there, as well as, people just depending on your religion, depending on your beliefs, depending on your gender, depending on your political beliefs. There are people out there who are just mean, and as we've seen that coming up in the media, have you been able to decipher that a little bit and see from where the stories are coming from? And is there a lot more bias on the reporters' parts than before?
Well, there probably is more bias, and I think it's even that is being promoted, I believe, by some of the news companies, because this line has sort of blurred between objectivity and subjectivity. I think the social media makes it easier to do that. I don't think there's more people with hate. I think we've always had people with hate. But one thing people don't understand about social media, and I've addressed this on a couple of platforms before, is that social media does not lend itself to debate. It is not being used for that. It's just being used by people to throw out things, to expound things, to insult. Sometimes for some good things, of course, but it's not someplace where you can come to and have an intelligent dialogue about anything.
And what about, as we were discussing before the program started, there have started ever since Harvey Weinstein situation came out, all of a sudden it's almost like floodgates have been open, and there have been many, many allegations and accusations against men by women. And I think you recently debated something like that on a Spanish radio program, did you not?
Yes, it's a very important topic, I think, that has kind of raised itself at this time. And I am a radio commentator for a radio station in Juarez. I've been doing that for about over 2 months now. It's something else that just opened up. Being bilingual, this affords me an opportunity to do in Spanish what I do in English sometimes. But this is a very interesting subject because it's something that has become almost a phenomenon of our time. This cascade of women coming forth to denounce men in power. And this is what the difference is. It's denouncing people in powerful positions, whether it's in politics, the entertainment industry, even people in media. And people, one of the questions we asked during that radio discussion was, why now? And I think why now has been created by events such as we had the Bill Cosby complaints that surfaced. Here was a man, an icon, who was accused of drugging and sexually assaulting more than 50 women over the course of his career. And then we had, of course, the denunciations against then-candidate Donald Trump. And that didn't seem to bother people. He went ahead and got elected anyway, in spite of that and other reservations that many people had voiced. But then all of a sudden, perhaps it was the Roy Moore figure, I don't know, what it was that triggered this cascade, but it happened. We had women who have come forward and to tell their stories about things that happened 20, 30, 40 years ago. And we know from what psychologists have told us that it is possible for people to silence and keep secret sexual abuse or sexual molestations they may have suffered. We saw this happening with the wave of complaints against priests and other people in the clergy, members of the clergy that had abused. And we had that in El Paso, Texas as well. We're talking about cases that were around 30 years old or more. And so something triggered women en masse. And there were some men as well, too, because we have, cases of alleging males abusing younger men or adolescent boys, men, again, in powerful positions with wealth and resources at their disposal or because they held high political positions. But I think all this created an environment that today makes it possible for people to come forward And this is part of the healing process. And if the healing doesn't take place, we have a lot of wounded people continuing to walk among and live among us, you know, living short-circuited lives, as I believe.
You were discussing earlier also that and the role of religion has come into this as well, faith. And some evangelical Christians have come forward to say that whatever happened with candidate Moore happened, and to move forward. And obviously that bothers a lot of people.
Well, it bothered me too, because I am an evangelical Christian and I totally disagree with that viewpoint. I think that within the circle of Christianity, there is a prophetic role that Christians would recognize if because they're familiar with the Bible. We have, for example, the example of the prophet Nathan confronting King David over his adultery and having Bathsheba's husband killed to try and cover that adultery. And then later on in the New Testament, we have John the Baptist confronting Herod over his adultery. And, of course, in the case of John the Baptist, we saw that he had his head cut off because of it. But there is a role in which people within the churches can and should confront wrong behavior that is harming other people on the part of people in powerful positions, including political leaders.
Has the title Christian or evangelical Christian hurt or helped in any way as far as the coverage of these news goes?
I believe so. You know, it's funny you mentioned this. I was just thinking about that very thing on the way here today, thinking about, wow, should evangelical Christians change their name? Should they call themselves something else now? Because all of these negative things that are going on, you know, Christian ministers supporting wrong behavior on the part of important people, prominent people, is giving Christianity a bad name, frankly, right? Because everybody gets painted with the same brush. And so it makes it difficult. One of the things that I do want to mention here is that we can't expect faith not to have a role in politics and government in our lives. You know, I think it has been wrong to kind of separate those two and pretend that we must live parallel lives. That we, on one hand, I'm a journalist, and the other hand, I have to turn around and be a Christian. Instead of accepting that I am a Christian and I am a journalist as well, and that my Christianity should operate in my life to make me a better journalist, ethics, morality, that sort of thing, it personally, so that I can be a good researcher for people who are depending on me to investigate, to research, to report.
We are visiting with reporter Diana Washington Valdez. She is the president of the DigiZone Network, and this is digital. Actually, if you go to the DigiZone.com, you will find a variety of stories that you've covered and also connected to, as you mentioned also before, tweets that other people have tweeted and talked about what's going on in the news today.
Yes, I'm trying to do my part to reduce the, well, at least through these venues and through these platforms, the frequency of fake news. And so the curated news collections that are in Spanish and in English come from a variety of sources. They include Reuters, The Guardian, The Washington Post, LA Times, you name it. A variety of sources. Sometimes when there's a big story breaking, I will have six or seven or more stories featured on the DigiZone Express on the same topic, but by different media outlets, so that then people can, you know, decide for themselves what the salient facts are. And the same thing in Spanish. And then the platforms also provide an opportunity to include original reporting here and there, yes.
We've seen also something that is very bothersome, a rise in shootings in our country. And, of course, the most recent one was in California. But before that, in Southern Springs, in that church, and people are wondering, you know, what is going on? Tell us about some of the tweets and some of the information and some of the responses you've gotten from your reporting on this.
Well, there have been two main responses. One is it is not about access to guns, and we need to leave gun regulations as they are already. And then there's the other side, is that we need greater restrictions to access to especially assault weapons. And we have, from this latest episode, we know at least two things. That it is still very easy for anyone to buy an assault weapon in the United States that should not be able to buy it. If a person has been deemed as mentally unstable, then that person should not be allowed to buy any kind of weapon, period. The other thing was that the present White House administration revoked a restriction that in the past prevented people with mental health issues from buying a weapon. Now, that is so crazy. That is absolutely mindless. But as I've mentioned before to others, it is the influence of the National Rifle Association that is contributing to the loosening of restrictions and regulations. And also the conspiracy stories we used to hear when President Obama became elected and then in a subsequent term. It was all this stuff on social media. I know it because I saw these endless stories. Oh, President Obama is going to take away our guns. And so there was always this rush to the gun stores to buy, to build up the arsenals. And, of course, that was never true. He never did do anything to restrict the access to weapons. But people believed it. You know, you repeated, you get on there on these right-wing media outlets, and that's all you would see, that's all you would hear, and people would believe it without questioning. And so we have a proliferation of weapons. Then we have people who have easy access to weapons who should not have them.
You mentioned the right-wing what did you say, right-wing
media
outlets? And so, and earlier you mentioned fake news, and this is something that was started, I think, with the Trump administration when we heard fake news. But now we're starting to hear left-wing, liberal, right-wing media, fake news, and then another one, alternative news. How do we separate all this?
I think by going to the sources. The sources of the information that you're looking at will let you know a great deal about what the agenda is. Now, if you go to, for example, let's say we go to Fox News, where you're going to expect a certain viewpoint, period. And that's why some people listen to it, review it, you know, because they want that viewpoint. They want to be fed. That's all they want. And then you may go to others like MSNBC, which is my personal favorite. And you can expect a certain viewpoint there, and for to color most of the commentary. I would say the commentary. And of course, the ideal would be for you to cafeteria style go to several sources, but the sources should be legitimate, you know, because we have these fly by night outfits that are popping up that somehow also have connections to Russian propaganda. That's something else big that we have to worry about now, which in the past we really didn't even think about. It wasn't a concern, but now it is, and it's a real one. It's a real concern, Louis.
You mentioned, propaganda, and you have to be careful who you talk with. And before we started this interview, you mentioned about, you know, scams going out there right now, people pretending to be reporters.
Yes, I just read briefly, before coming here, something about a reporter, an alleged reporter, someone claiming to be a reporter for the Washington Post, contacting someone to get dirt, quote, on Roy Moore. Now, at least they were able to determine that so-called reporter was fake. All right. So now we don't just have fake news. Now we have fake reporters, people calling you up, representing themselves as something they're not. In a way, social media makes this more possible, you know, because information flows much faster than it did in the past, quickly, and that means errors also fly faster than they used to. So even though social media can correct itself, by the time it gets out there, something that's wrong or false, then it's people already have believed it, you know.
And sometimes, as you've known, once it's open, I mean, it's gone. You can't bring it back. Some people have gone to the extreme, whereas they say, well, the news, you just can't believe it anymore. I don't read the newspapers. I don't watch television. I don't listen to the radio. So that, in a way, makes it even worse, where they just quit listening, quit watching, quit reading. They don't know what's going on.
That's the worst case scenario, because that's giving up and throwing your hands up and saying, well, can't figure it out. It's too much trouble, so nothing. And I also know of people say they don't read the newspaper, they don't watch TV news because it's too depressing. that too is the wrong view. because there's a lot of information out there that also celebrates the achievements of men, women, and children here and there, you know, and around the world. There are a lot of tremendous things going on. And but we do, I think, as citizens have a civic responsibility to inform ourselves. And I think if once we accept that, and, you know, if you're registered to vote, you own a house and you pay a mortgage and you pay property taxes, there are big incentives there for you to inform yourself, right? Especially around election time. Yes, you're going to have those views, Louis, but I think we've always had them. It's just that these views are getting more amplified, again, because of the social media. It just seems to make it bigger than it is.
Tell us a little bit about the DigiZone, and because people may be wondering if they've never been to the site, and the site is thedigizone.com. Also, what is faithmedia.com? Is that a different website as well?
Yes, it was. It's faithmedia.com has been merged. First, the idea was that we need to get more faith-based news out there because I know there's a hunger for it, and I know that sometimes your local newspapers don't have the staffs to. I used to be a religion reporter for the El Paso Times among my many roles there, and that was a very fun time. It's also very challenging, and if I had to do it over again, I would do it very differently, and I did it back then, but. So I created a venue for faith-related news. And then I realized something, that what I should do is integrate what we would call news about religion, so-called, into the regular news digest, both in Spanish and English, rather than having it as a separate segment. Because we don't want to be preaching to the choir type of thing. And the news about religions includes a Muslim faith, Christianity, the Jewish faith, and so on. And a lot of tremendous, very interesting things that are going on. And how many wars do we see that are motivated by religion? And over history, a lot of the social movements we saw, even in this country, often faith was a leading factor in the movements, the social movements that occurred in our country and in Europe and, well, throughout the world.
Diana Washington Valdez has been our guest on the weekend this afternoon, and she is the president of the DigiZone Network. But she also has some other web addresses that you can go to find out more about the DigiZone. First, thedigizone.com, then prensa360.com. and faithmediazone.com. And those are all three that are run by you as well?
Yes. And in addition to those venues, Louis, I'm also consolidating a lot of the same information on my Facebook page, knowing that people are going to Facebook for news. So I'm trying to make it easy for people to link up to those news outlets as well as to the other items I've mentioned before.
And the Facebook page, Diana, would it be under the DigiZone Network or under your name?
Well, if you type my name in, you know, in Google, you'll get it. But it'll be the page that says DigiZone. And there are side pages, one that has that's called Faith Today, where I include all the faith-related information and news, and a side project that includes that's called The Dead and Missing, and the one that is related to the David Leonard Wood investigation.
Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We've been visiting with Diana Washington Valdez. She is the president of the DigiZone Network, a global community. The weekend is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Luis Sainz.